Hello and welcome to the Business of InfoSec podcast with me, Michelle Ribeiro. In this podcast, we chat to senior information and cybersecurity executives from a range of industries about their passions, experiences, and challenges. Without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into today's episode. Welcome to the Business of InfoSec podcast. This week, we are talking about diversity and inclusion, collaboration, and zero trust imperative. Joining me is Jay Hira, who is a cybersecurity practitioner. Welcome, Jay. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you, Michelle. Great to be here. And thanks for having me on your podcast platform.
Just a brief introduction to our listeners. Jay studied computer science and engineering and started his career in security as a penetration tester straight after uni. His curiosity to constantly learn and grow has led him to explore different areas of cybersecurity, including attack, defense, architecture, strategy, and governance throughout his career journey. Jay speaks to businesses in the financial services sector about strengthening cyber resilience through the adoption of zero trust principles during the day. He transforms into a cyber warrior at night, advocating for diversity and collaboration in our industry. I have to say, Jay, you are doing an amazing job during your night shifts. You are writing inspiring articles, you are supporting your colleagues, and you are even being nominated to awards. That's amazing. Now, when Jay is not at his work desk, he enjoys a good coffee and some fresh air. Best things in life, right, Jay?
100%.
And you also mentioned you love reading books. I'm curious to know, what is your favorite book?
Well, there's a book, Ikigai, that's one of my favorite books. Every time I feel I'm a bit lost in life, I just go back to the book and read the book. There's plenty of them. There's another one, which is Essentialism by Greg McKeown. That's another favorite book of mine. So I think it depends on what's the state of mind that I have. So if I want to break bad habits, then I go to a book written by Charles Duggins on the power of habit. So I think it just depends. But one of my favorite books is Ikigai, that because it essentially tells you how do you really align what you do in your life and achieve happiness, and fulfillment through what you do.
That's very interesting. I'm going to check it out. I'm curious. So when I was introducing you, I spoke about your passion for being an advocate for change. And I have to say, I am personally very inspired by you. That's actually how we met. We both wrote articles for the Women in Security magazine. And I wanted to just ask you, Jay, if you could share a little bit more about your experiences with diversity and inclusion.
Sure, Michelle. And first of all, thank you. That's very kind of you to say. Now, as practitioners in the cybersecurity industry, we're constantly solving a problem that is complex and has too many moving parts. It would be impractical, if not impossible, for organizations to spend unlimited capital on cybersecurity. Instead, it has to be a balanced approach of risk versus reward. Put simply, we cannot spend more than what we're trying to protect. To add to the complexity, there is no one size fits all or a cookie cutter sort of solution to cybersecurity problem, right? That would simplify life. Every organization needs to invest in cyber and prioritize this investment in a way that aligns with their business objectives. Now, with so many moving parts, there is no one person that has all of the answers. And if you have an A team, and if you bring in an A team of people with similar sort of educational background, experiences, and viewpoints, they're likely to have the same sort of biases and therefore blind spots in the way they solve the problem. It is only when we bring together a diverse group of individuals with different ethnicities, academic backgrounds, ages, and life experiences that we get a more comprehensive approach to solving this complex problem at hand, which is cybersecurity. Now that addresses the diversity element. How do we ensure that we have a diverse team? that is only possible through an inclusive environment. We're all human beings and we perform. We were just discussing before we got into the conversation around how staying fit and healthy is important to well-being and being optimal in terms of our performance. And as human beings, we perform at our optimal level when we feel that we're being included and our voices are being heard. Effectively, we need an inclusive culture. In other words, one that celebrates and empowers a diverse group in order to attract and retain a diverse team.
Yes, some very interesting thoughts. And in your opinion, how can companies benefit from having a diverse cybersecurity team?
So a diverse cybersecurity team is capable of better decision-making and more comprehensive, innovative, and effective ways of solving complex problems. And when we build these diverse cybersecurity teams by offering an inclusive work environment where individuals are accepted for the value that they bring to the table, that's when we're working together, collaborating together, and winning together.
Sure. And how do you see cybersecurity evolving based on your experience? You have a lot of many years in experience in this space. How do you see it's changing the way companies operate and make strategic decisions?
Well, so much has changed in the past couple of years, and organizations have had to constantly keep pivoting to keep pace with the changes in the environment. First, it was the rapid digital transformation and the shift to remote working to accommodate for the impact of COVID-19. While we were still adapting to those changes, there has been geopolitical instability, and the hyper-connected world that we live in today meant that Australian businesses, which are like halfway across the world away from where the geopolitical tension was, they got impacted too. If we talk about ransomware, that's evolved and become a commodity. A lot of people talk about Industrial Revolution 4.0, which is mainly the convergence of operational technology and information technology that promises unprecedented growth for businesses, but at the same time, it is the same convergence that leads to an extended attack surface where threats can move laterally between the two sorts of environments of OT and IT. Two main themes that have emerged through everything that has changed in the past couple of years. The first theme is threat actors are collaborating and innovating at a much faster pace than they have in the past, while we're still playing catch up. The second theme is that what worked in the past, and by that I mean the conventional approaches to security, may not work as effectively with all of the changes that have happened or all of the changes that we've witnessed in the last couple of years.
And what are your thoughts on collaboration? Because you are also a strong advocate for collaboration. How do you think it can be successfully applied to the cybersecurity function across different businesses?
Great question. We need to think of collaboration as an extension of the concept of neighborhood watch, where families on a street share information with one another to prevent criminal activity on the street. And in a similar manner, there is a need for collaboration between organizations in the private sector and between organizations in the private sector and public sector to strengthen the cyber defenses and enhance resilience. Now, in order to foster this sort of knowledge sharing, this sort of collaboration, it needs to be incentivized. Nobody's going to be a saint to start sharing information without there being an incentive. So what could potentially that incentive be? I could think of maybe tax incentives from the government in exchange for sharing threat intel. Now, with the increase in digitization and the convergence, like we said, of IT and OT, there are more opportunities for a motivated threat actor than ever before. The damaging success of the threat actors or the adversaries is due to the attribute that they collaborate much better. Now, the sooner we, the good guys, start adopting the same sorts of behaviors or the same sorts of attributes of greater global collaboration, I think we'd be able to stop playing catch up and be able to enhance and build cyber capabilities and cyber resilience against these adversaries.
Yeah, absolutely. Some very interesting thoughts. Now, before we started recording our podcast, you also mentioned that there is another topic that's close to your heart, and the topic is zero trust. As we spoke about digital acceleration and how cybersecurity is evolving, zero trust is a very pertinent topic. So I'd like to ask you, why do you think zero trust is imperative?
Well, good, great question, Michelle. Zero trust as a strategy and as a concept has been around for close to two decades. 2004 is when, through Jericho Forum, we had heard for the first time about zero trust, and I was just graduating from college. We've also known that the biggest challenges in our industry, which is cybersecurity, is the crisis of prioritization. There's always fire. Which fire do you, try to put a fire hose on? The lack of traction or adoption of zero trust can be attributed to this crisis of prioritization. As we were discussing earlier, that there's a lot that has changed in the last couple of years, including acceleration of digital transformation, the convergence of digital and physical, the shift to a largely remote workforce or a hybrid sort of an operating model. And all of these changes have led to conventional approaches to security that were mostly network-centric and perimeter-focused become increasingly ineffective. Now, that in effect has led to the shift of the zero trust strategy from being just an adoption option to being an imperative. There is no option as such. We've got to jump onto the zero trust bandwagon in order to continue to be able to fight with the adversaries and threat actors and keep pace with them.
Yeah, thank you. Now, what are your recommendations for CISOs and cybersecurity leaders when they are adopting zero trust strategy?
We've got to stop believing that there is a product or a solution that could be implemented to achieve zero trust. Zero trust, like we discussed, is a strategy that in turn consumes many different products for a successful adoption. We've also got to replace the belief that everything that is behind the perimeter or a corporate firewall is safe, irrespective of wherever a user or a device is on either side of the corporate firewall, whether it's on the outside of the corporate firewall or on the inside of the corporate firewall. It needs to be treated as coming from an untrusted or an uncontrolled network, leaving no room for default trust. We've got to stop thinking of zero trust as binary as well. A lot of people think of way either, there is zero trust or there is no zero trust. We've got to start leveraging zero trust as a risk management tool. I'd suggest to start small on your zero trust adoption journey, align investments with business objectives, demonstrate value back to business, build that confidence, and steadily but incrementally move from wherever it is that you've started more towards zero trust. You don't necessarily need to be able to attain zero trust, because achieving zero trust is like achieving nirvana. Implementing incremental capability uplifts around the five foundational pillars of zero trust, which are data, user, devices, network, and workloads, and an overarching umbrella of capabilities to detect, respond, and recover, is what we've got to start working on when we, talk about our adoption journey.
Yeah, very interesting what you mentioned on leveraging zero trust as a risk management tool. What would you say cybersecurity leaders should avoid at all costs?
Adoption of any strategy, zero trust or not, needs to be planned in a phased manner with small but incremental uplifts and capabilities. We don't necessarily need to change all of the existing technologies that we have in our environment or completely revamp all of the infrastructure. Most successful implementations of zero trust strategies, like I was discussing, start really small, are aligned with business needs, and provide targeted but specific uplifts in the capability areas. It could be You know, for example, if you start with a user pillar, it could be enforcing conditional access controls at the back of the contextual information that a user brings. When I say contextual information, I'm referring to things like, what's my user ID? What sort of role do I have? What's my location? Where am I coming from? What sort of device am I coming from? What's the OS fingerprint of the device, whether it's a managed device or an unmanaged device? Being able to make a conditional access decision, you know, by looking at this contextual information in itself is a program. So, and once we have had, you know, controls that are functional, whether it is conditional access control, the example that I took, it is easier to refine the quality of the control or extend the coverage of the control. We don't need to necessarily start. You've got to make a start for a particular application, and then you've got to expand the control in terms of coverage across the suite of all of your crown jewels or all of your critical applications.
Yeah, thank you very much. You've shared some amazing insights with us today. So would you have any biggest takeaways or any final thoughts that you'd like to share with the audience today?
Well, we covered a lot of ground in this short conversation, Michelle. And if we were to sum it up for our audience, I'd say we're doing very well as a community of cybersecurity practitioners when it comes to collaboration within this community. But we need to come together as an industry to foster greater collaboration, greater diversity, greater adoption of zero trust principles for a better and safer tomorrow. That's how I conclude.
Yeah, absolutely. It all comes down to having good collaboration.
100%.
Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you, Michelle. Thanks for having me on the show.
We hope you have enjoyed the Business of InfoSec podcast. Be sure to subscribe from whatever you're currently listening. Plus, if you are listening from Apple Podcast, please consider leaving us a review. As always, you can find us and engage with us on social media, as well as on the Business of InfoSec website, where you can find this podcast, as well as other topical articles, reports, and videos. So, until next time, take care.